Michelle!
Geordie! Hello!
Hello! How are you?
How are you?
Oh, I said
I think
first.
We said that at the same time!
I don't care how you are. No, I do. Of course I do. Did you not almost get killed in an avalanche this week?
Oh, man. They've been crazy. The whole town was cut off. No one could get in. No one could get out. Not a single...
You said there was no food?
No, there's no food on the shelves. Nothing.
What are you eating?
Well, we've been eating... like dodgy tin food. Oof. Honestly, like one of those doomsdayers.
Do you have a little cellar full of baked beans? And no wonder you've been boop boop.
Oh God, don't even. Quack. I'm full of fart these days. I think it's the hormones.
No, I'd say it's the tinned beans that you've been having to survive on since the avalanche.
No, do you know what? There's been no beans in the diet, really. Oh. I don't know what the hell it is. But anyway, we're fine.
Oh, okay. So. It's all good. You're all right now. The ups and downs of alpine living, isn't it? I mean, you make it sound like it's all champagne, high days and holidays, but actually there are some, you know, some realities to deal with.
You could die in an avalanche. Yeah. And actually, you know, one of Andreas's friends quite a few years ago had a bad accident and died in an avalanche. So, you know, it's serious stuff. Really serious. Quite scary.
On that bright note, Michelle, before we all get really sad, I'm sorry to hear about that, but I'd like to welcome our listeners to Eavesdropping. You didn't say anything. Eavesdropping. Oh, one, two, three. What's happening?
Eavesdropping. There it is. Oh dear.
Yes, welcome anyway. To our weekly dose of chit-chattery. Michelle is that one. I'm this one. I'm Geordie. I'm the tall one.
I'm the short one.
So, Michelle, last week's episode, we got quite a lot of new listeners, actually. And I just wanted to give a little shout out to Linda's mum, Jet, who got in touch. And she's now listening to the whole back catalogue. Hi, Jet.
Hi, Jet.
I think I told you that she told me something quite funny and I was going to tell you about it today. She remembers when I was pregnant with my adult son. And she and her mother, so Linda's grandmother, took Linda and I on a shopping trip to Nowra Fair, which was the only place you could get your fashions back in those days. Apparently, I was barefoot and Linda's nan thought that I didn't have a fashion. She said to Jet, "Where's her family? That poor girl. Does no one love her? We should buy her some shoes."
Oh, no. She didn't realise you were just a hippy-dippy.
Well, that's what Jet says. But to be honest, she said, "Oh, she's just a hippie." But to be honest, I'm not sure that it wasn't because no shoes would have fit me at that time, because I tend to swell up like a beach ball.
Oh, God. It's Yeah, but come on, pair of thongs. Pair of thongs.
Could have worn thongs, couldn't I? Yeah. Okay, maybe I was being a hippie. So there you go. Hi, Jet. And also over in Berlin, we have the lovely Terry Terrence. Terrence Whitaker has joined He's joined the fray. He's listening and he's sharing it with all his fashion friends. Terry is a fashion friend of mine from long ago.
Oh, I remember Tezza. Hello, Terry.
Hi, Terry.
Oh, nice of you listening.
And I have a couple of apologies. The pronunciations of Glenoid. You were
Is
right.
Is that the correct way?
It Glenoid. Was Glenoid. I don't know if you were. You said it was. Yeah, it's not Glenoid. It's that sounds like a village in Scotland. It was Glenoid. And Dr. Leung, you were right. Dr. Leung.
Okay.
Not long,
there you go.
Not
because
Leung.
You are a stickler for pronunciation. We still
am.
Not. We still never got to the bottom of Launceston. Launceston.
Oh, we did. It's Launceston in Australia, and it's Launceston here in England.
Well, that's like Houston and Houston.
Huh?
Yeah, okay, forget it.
What?
In New
Who
York.
Who says Houston? Oh, that's, no, but that's different. That's the street, isn't it, in New York, Houston?
Yes,
and
you go to
Houston.
Houston
is.
Yeah, it's spelled the same.
It's something different. Oh, is it? Okay.
Spelled the same. Right. Anyway. Yeah, I had lots of lovely feedback about last week's episode. My sister said she thought Linda's story was absolutely amazing.
Well, it is. It is amazing. Linda's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, she is. Honestly, I still get goosebumps thinking about what she's been through and how far she's come. So absolutely brilliant.
Not only that, but Linda has inspired me to
get a mammogram.
No, okay. I've had one of those. No, not to sweat the small stuff.
Of course. I mean, that's something we all have to remember.
Yeah, to look at things with a different perspective, because you don't really appreciate what you've got until you almost lose it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, I've got a couple of other apologies. First of all, Jen.
Oops.
Hi, Jen.
Whenever you say that at the top of the show, I get a bit scared. Have we upset her?
Oh, look, I don't think she liked my portrayal of her cancer story that much. Sorry about that, Jen. And she did say that it was donuts as well as chocolates to the nurses. Sorry about that. I think I was only in the hospital for around 4 to 5 weeks, not 6 to 8. But honestly, it felt like a long, long time. I actually don't really remember how long I was in there for.
Well, you were there, and that's the most important thing, Michelle.
Yeah.
You were there when she needed you.
I was there with those nurses looking at Jen's splendid array of 90s. I didn't mention that last week.
A 90 for every occasion.
She did. My favourite two were the one with like photograph of a kitten, fluffy orange kitten with party hat on, called Party Animal. and my all-time favourite one in like comic writing, Party All Night, Sleep All Day. That's Mum in a hospital. The nurses loved her 90s. She was the queen of the comedy 90s. So.
Fantastic. Yeah. Bring those back.
And also, I think I do have to have a little apology to Ben Mendelsohn, because frankly, we've ignored him.
Oh, sorry,
Ben. We've been ignoring him for the last couple of episodes.
But have you seen that I've turned his iconic quote, "You two better watch out. We don't like anything's around here." I've made him sound like Dickie Knee. Do you remember Dickie Knee from Hey Hey It's Saturday? It was that little thing at the front of the television. It was just like the back of the head of a schoolboy.
And he sounds like that. Oh my God.
You two better watch out.
Man, no, I can't sit around here. Well, because I had watched Animal Kingdom, which obviously inspired my latest video attempt.
Yes, the pizza.
Come a ping pong. But also, I mean, I have to say, he was astonishing in that.
And we're taking the piss.
So, the website's up, everybody.
Website.
Okay, so you want to have a look?
And it's called?
There it is. Eavesdroppingpodcast.com.
And we have, it's funny, Michelle, talking about memories and people having fake memories and whatever. I had a dream that you told me we had a YouTube channel.
And we do.
And we do. But that was because you actually told me. It wasn't a dream.
I think I did tell you.
I got confused between dreams and reality.
Oh, so, well, and on that note of...
Are we segueing very awkwardly into our story for this week?
Badly, very badly. All right. Well, what are we talking about this week, Jordy?
Hometown Murders are back, I'm afraid, Michelle.
Part two.
This time I've got a story about an awful murder, double murder, that happened in my hometown where my parents still live, in the street where I lived since I was a teenager and where my parents were living at the time of the murders.
Fuck, I didn't realise it was in the same street.
It's like a few doors down from where my parents
live. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And it happened in 2008.
That is not that long ago.
Not that long ago. In the little town of Batemans Bay where I was raised. So one day I asked my parents, I ring them and I say, how's it going, Mum and Dad? And sometimes they'll say things like, oh, there was a riot the other day. Yes, all the boys came up from the pub. And I know. I'm like, what? And then another time they said there was a double murder. And that was the shocking thing of all.
I'm sorry. We live in London. We've lived in London.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Yep. Southeast London, Peckham, Brixton.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever said to Jen, oh, yeah, then there was a murder yesterday. You know?
I know. It's shocking.
Batemans Bay is more scary than London.
Well, when I go back to that part of Batemans Bay, which is right on the beach, it has been feeling less and less safe. I'm happy to say my parents have moved from there now, so I feel a lot better about it. But not that it's Murder Mile or anything. It was just very unfortunate. And I just want to preface this episode by saying that there are victims, obviously, and their families, plus the perpetrator and that person's family. And we don't mean any disrespect, but we want to tell the story. Because Hazel, my psychic... Real estate agent.
Friend, yes.
was the one that filled me in on all the details, because she had a front row seat almost to the goings on of that day back in 2008.
Fuck. What was she showing a house on that street?
It was a rented house. Whoa. But this is how she tells it. I'm gonna let Hazel's words take over now. So brace yourselves. Here Great. She comes. I was upstairs in the office and the property management were in a bit of a fluster, as there had been a crime scene established at one of the properties that we rented and they needed to get keys for access and contact the owner.
Hang on, hang on. The crime was committed in the house that she was renting. Fuck! Oh my God.
That their estate agent was renting.
Oh, yeah? Jesus yeah. Christ. Okay, wow.
Yeah. I have blinkers on at work, so didn't take much notice, but heard it was a property on Beach Road, Batehaven. Hello, that's where I used to live.
Oh, my God.
That's where my parents used to live.
I've got to stop saying, oh, my God, but this is an oh, my God episode.
By mid-morning, I had to go on an appointment, and there was a lady sitting on the step of our office drinking a can of rum and coke. I thought, wow.
Nice.
It's early, but who am I to judge? She was wearing jeans, clean, freshly washed hair, and clean clothes. She looked like a soccer mum who didn't want to go home after putting the kids on the bus. Coming back an hour later, she was still there, still drinking. And as I'm a friendly soul, I smiled as I walked up towards the agency steps. She looked at me straight in the eyes and immediately I sensed that she was going to want to fight me.
What?
If I had held her stare, she would have hurled abuse or started throwing punches. Her eyes were black.
Oof.
Her pupils so dilated, it was like looking at evil. Full fight response.
Fuck.
I just dropped my eyes and smiled and pretended that she had disappeared suddenly. Do you ever do that when you're walking past people? Just go, suddenly feel really awkward and just pretend like, yep. You're not there. I can't see you.
Queen
in the supermarket.
Do you know what though? The problem is my eyesight's getting so shit these days.
That actually, happening for real.
I don't see people. So yeah.
It was like all my hair stood on end and I felt sick to my stomach. We know about Hazel and her
she's
psychic
got a
abilities.
Gift. Yeah. She's got a gift.
Her intuition.
Yeah.
Anyway, she remembers, going back to Hazel, I remember telling my PA that no one should go near her. There were some rumblings about the lady outside who had been there all morning, but no one said any more. A little while later, I decided to go and buy some fags at the news agency next door and intended to go and have a dozer round the corner. Michelle, do you want to explain what a dozer is?
I don't even know. You have
you
to explain
don't know what a dozer
me.
Is.
What the hell's a
it's
dozer?
It's short for a durry.
Okay.
Do you know what a durry is?
No.
It's a cigarette. It's Australian
oh,
slang for cigarette.
It is.
You wouldn't yeah. know because you don't smoke. I bet Ben Mendelsohn would know. He's
he
going to have a dozer with his brown lemonade.
Oh,
I'm just going to get myself a brown lemonade and a dozer.
Durry. All right.
As I walked outside, there were people waiting for the local bus, sitting, minding their own business. I can see exactly where she is. I know exactly where she is
oh,
in the
God.
Town. This lady now, on her next drink, decided unprovoked to pick a fight with a guy that I would have given a wide berth to.
So she was right. She was like spoiling uh-huh. for a fight, this woman.
Yep. He had the guy that she was spoiling for a fight with, he had a white bandana on under his sports cap, three earrings in one ear and some missing laterals. What's a lateral?
Incisor? Teeth?
Huh?
Teeth?
No. I had a feeling it might be like the this bit here. That's a septum. The bit
no,
between
I think,
your nose.
I think she's talking about teeth.
Laterals?
Lateral incisor? Am I making that up?
Maybe. Okay.
I think he's toothless.
All right.
Anyway.
Okay. She started screaming at him for no reason and wanting a fight. I was like, whoa, soccer mum is one angry chick. He said, I don't even know you. We don't like Henderson's around here. He said, I don't even know you. Get away from me. That's my best missing lateral. They wouldn't have been talking like that. We don't like Henderson's around here. Anyway, she then asked him if he knew where she lived. She repeated her address over and over again. The news
Weird.
Agent then rang the police, so I snuck out to have a secret cigarette, a.k.a. Dazza, and watch from a safe distance. So it was almost like a big show going on.
Does
the bus
help?
Pulled up. Yeah. So the bus pulled up. Then she harassed a poor old fellow with his wheelie shopping trolley. She was right up in his face, so he decided to step away and take the other bus.
As you would.
Absolutely. Don't you hate it when that happens? Oh, yeah. And they sit next to you, always next.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And there's loads of other seats. She got on as the police arrived. They followed her on the bus, said a few words, and she was compliant. Everyone moved on with their lives, and I went back to work thinking, what a nut job. You know, obviously, you can judge in a situation like that, can't you? Because she's just seen this complete thing unfurl all morning in front of her.
But also too, let's not forget, she was spotted drinking rum and cokes from early in the morning. So yeah, she's probably fucking smashed.
Absolutely. So anyway, back to Hazel. I worked until late and had heard about the fact that there had been a double murder at such and such number on Beach Road. The reports were stating that it was a horrific scene.
Oof, okay.
Driving home, going through my day, I then had this lightning bolt. Oh my God, the address she kept repeating. Crikey, it was only 4 or 5 doors down.
Okay.
What if she didn't want to go home? What if she was waiting for the heat to die down? By the time I got home, I'd cracked the case. I gave my hypothetical story to hubby and he told me to phone the police.
Good work.
Absolutely. I phoned them sheepishly with my story and the next minute I'm on the phone with a detective. The next morning, there are news crews everywhere in the bay and I was asked to go to the police station to give a statement. Born with a highly attuned, nearly photographic memory, I was able to provide them with a very in-depth story. I mean, is there no end to Hazel's talents as
well? I know, she's incredible.
Yeah.
Jealous.
They broke the mold. Yeah. 2 nights later on the national news, I saw the woman, but with a blurred face, being handcuffed and put into a police car. The detective rang me 10 minutes later and asked me to come back into the station. I then had a video interview where they provided me with printed photos of 10 or 12 women with dark hair and of a similar age. I circled the one that I knew was her and I was right. They had gone to the address and there had been evidence from the house and other interviews that put the pieces together. She was arrested and charged with the murders.
Murders.
2 people died.
Fuck.
A hunch? A sixth sense. I had locked eyes with a killer. The family got a message to me through friends of friends to say thank you. But I think I was just a tiny piece of the puzzle, to be honest, as lots of things came to light. Intuition is my thing. And we know that about Hazel. Thank you for your story, Hazel. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit of background on what actually happened to 86-year-old Ken Kite. I'm going to call him. It's K-E-Y-T-E and his wife, 71-year-old wife, Margaret.
Okay.
They were found dead in their home on August 10, but it's believed that they died possibly the day before.
Okay.
They were victims of a violent attack. The bashings were so gruesome and savage, formal identification was hampered.
Oh my God.
I'm so sorry.
You didn't even do a trigger warning, Geordie.
I'm sorry. So what happened, what they believe happened was, there was a neighbour, Tracy Lee Pratt, who is the lady that Hazel saw. She was arrested for the murders. After the couple's death, rumours circulated that they had become involved in an argument about Pratt's cat being caught in a possum trap by the Kites or Cates. I don't know how to pronounce their name.
Hang on. So let me just unravel that.
Yeah.
So Tracy is
She's
soccer
a neighbor.
Mom.
Yeah.
She's a neighbor.
Yeah.
The Kites are the old couple that got murdered.
Yes.
They had a...
In their rented home.
Yep. Okay.
On Beach Road, up the road from my parents. Yep.
So they put out a possum trap. Tracy's cat went in the possum trap.
Possibly.
Oh, God. All right. Okay.
I think that there was some concern that they were being stalked by her for a little while. I'm not sure what was going on. There were rumours going on that I was under the impression, until I spoke to Hazel, that it was a former drug house and that she was getting her supply from there and she was so desperate for it that she went in and just went berserk. But
okay,
that rumour was put to bed.
Okay.
A year later, Tracy Lee Pratt was found not guilty. Forensic psychiatrist... Hold
not guilty!
I know. Dr. Olaf Nielsen and Pratt said Pratt had been suffering mental illness for many years and was admitted to Goulburn Hospital in 2006 for paranoid delusions and psychosis. Oh, she was treated with antipsychotic medication and placed on a community treatment order for 6 months. Dr. Nielsen said that when that order lapsed, she discontinued her medication and was lost in the system. So this is what happened to Tracy, and this is what happened ultimately to the elderly couple, the Kites, who was brutally murdered. I mean, at the time she was suffering, Miss Pratt was suffering from florid delusions that Mr. Okay. Kite was stalking her and wanted to steal her son, and that Mrs. Kite was in collusion. It was part of a raft of delusions she was experiencing at the time, including the belief the moon was about to hit the earth and that she had the raw energy to cure AIDS.
Okay. How the hell did she slip through the system?
She got lost in the system. And this is the danger of, you know, I think when serious mental health breaks occur. And so it's okay to say, oh, what a nut job, but those people need help. Lives have been ruined, not just the victims of the murder and not just the woman who's now,
but you know
I got blood on her hands.
Yeah, literally. But
she's got a family.
Yeah, and this is my next point. Who in her family or her circle of friends
didn't notice, or
who just didn't bother to step up and at least call in some kind of authority to say, listen.
Or perhaps there's nothing that could be done. Perhaps it was flagged, but nothing could be done.
What do you mean nothing could be done?
Well, because it was just, oh, she's acting strangely. Okay, well, let's just keep an eye on her then. Who knew what she was going to do next? This is the thing. It's reported Pratt knew what she was doing was legally wrong, but her mind was so diseased by paranoid schizophrenia that she did not appreciate the moral wrongness of her actions. She will remain as a forensic patient in an appropriate jail or secure hospital with regular reviews by the mental health tribunal to assess her suitability to be released gradually into the community. So she won't be in prison, but she is probably still currently in some kind of secure psychiatric unit, hopefully being kept an eye on, because...
It's tough, isn't it? Because the thing is, she has now proven that she's not sound enough of mind to understand her actions and be in the community. What do you do? These are tough questions.
Absolutely. It makes me worried about those people that we just mentioned that slipped through the cracks.
Yeah.
And their neighbours and family.
Yeah.
We need to be equipped more as individuals, I think, to be able to see the signs, but not lock everybody up equally. I mean, there's the opposite end of the snit. People get a bit over enthusiastic about people who are might not seem like they are fully compos mentis.
Oh, look, I don't even know what to think about that case.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one.
Because,
and it's devastating. You know, that really threw the community into a really dark place.
Well, the thing is, there's a lot of ice use down on the south coast. And I thought for sure there was some kind of drug related.
That's what they thought initially. Now, ice, I always forget the name of it. It's ice, you're right. It's what they called, what's that thing, Breaking Bad? Okay. Methamphetamine. It's methamphetamine, isn't it?
Yeah, it's meth.
Yeah. Meth.
Crystal meth.
So they call it ice in Australia. Mm. And yeah, there is a lot of use of it.
Yeah, right.
There. So maybe, I mean, it seems to be quite popular amongst the 30s and 40-year-olds as well for some reason.
I think it's cheap. You know, cheap drugs. Cheap high. I don't know. It's not as popular in the UK. You know, it's not like...
I'd like to say that it's not popular here in the burbs. I mean, maybe it is. Maybe people are taking it. Michelle, we're just not being invited
to
that party.
They don't think we're fun enough.
No.
Oh.
We're already high on life.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So listen, I'm really sorry about that story. It was heavy. It was dark. But it's a hometown murder.
Well, buckle up, because I've got something just as dark coming up.
What have you got?
Again, hometown murder. So Jen had, after we did the last one with David Pike, just before Christmas last year, I'd been speaking to Mum and she had mentioned this cold case that has really stayed with her for decades. There have been articles about this case over the years, but what I think Mum found really chilling about this case was that when it happened, the girl who went missing was of a similar age to my older sister, and I think it just really struck a nerve with her. And also at that time in Canberra, I think this disappearance was really shocking. So, you know, mum had said, oh, well, if you do another hometown murder, can you look into this one? So that's what I've done. So
okay.
The basics of the case are this. At midday on Saturday, July 28th, and this is in 1984, a 17-year-old girl called Megan Louise Mulquinney. Now, I have no idea if she's Megan Mulquinney. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing
Megan.
This. Megan? No one's called Megan. No,
I'm sorry.
Do you know what? In Sweden, it's Magan. Megan. Megan.
Megan. Yeah. Megan.
Anyway, Megan. Megan Mulquinney. So she clocked off her shift at Big W at Woden Plaza.
Now, we've been discussing Big W versus Woolworths. Do you want to just clear this up once and for all?
Okay, all right. So same parent company, which is Woolworths. However, right. Two different brands.
Wait, so. In England, Woolworths is like the pick and mix. It's like your massive pound store, but more expensive. They used to do kids' clothes. And if you needed clothes dye, that's where you'd go. What else? You'd get, or it's like a pound shop, but for expensive things. They weren't a pound, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you see.
Because they're gone now. They went during the recession.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. No.
But so in Australia, you get your groceries at Woolworths.
So Woolies, you get your groceries. And Big W is more like a Kmart.
Okay, got
so
it.
So you get all your everything, but not okay. groceries. So
got it.
It's more, yeah, variety store. You know,
okay.
clothes and shoes and snorkels and God knows whatever.
Snorkels.
You want. Snorkels. Why not?
It's very random.
I know. So this poor girl, 17 years old, Megan Mulquinney, she finished up her shift at Big W at Woden Plaza. Now, Woden Plaza is a big shopping mall on the south side of Canberra in Australia. And she's never been seen since.
Oh.
Yeah. So, look, I would say back in 1984, there was only half day trading. Do you remember? Like shops
Sundays?
Saturdays, shops would close at midday on a Saturday. So all the, don't you remember, everybody would have like Saturday morning jobs?
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Because you'd start at maybe 8 and the shops would close at 12. So I think she had a Saturday morning job. Once again, like I did with the David Pike story, I've gone through archival material from the Canberra Times, which is the local paper. And the first mention of this case is on July 30th, which is a Monday. So they raised the alarm on her disappearance pretty quickly for back then, because obviously, you know, internet things can happen immediately. But back then you had to sort of report it and, you know, it took time to get into the news. So it was just a small piece in the paper. And it was your basic kind of missing persons appeal for information. So it just said she'd been missing since midday on Saturday. There you go, midday on Saturday.
Okay.
Last seen at Big W, and that it was out of character for her to disappear without telling anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And then they gave a description of her. She's 150 centimetres tall, sorry, 157 centimetres tall. Did I say that? Anyway, slightly built with fair complexion, brown eyes and shoulder-length brown hair. She was last seen wearing a black velvet skirt and jacket, very 80s, yeah. A checkered blouse and flat black shoes. So
would that be the uniform? Do they have a Big W uniform?
I don't know. Velvet uniform?
No.
Nice. No. If it were, I think she got changed after work.
Yeah.
So, and she, now this article actually had a picture of her and I'll put it on the social media because the picture they posted was the one that is now the one that's used everywhere. And this is important because I'll talk about why this picture is important.
Okay.
Down the line. And you know what? She just looks so young in this picture. And she is like quintessential early 80s. She has got this brown hair. She's got the full flicks that go down all the way to shoulder
amazing.
Length.
Amazing.
I mean, I wanted that flick so bad back in the 80s. And I could never do it as good as her. She had really good hair. Anyway, the next report is the following day on July 31st. So this is 3 days after she's gone missing. And it's a longer news piece because by this time, I think the police had probably ruled out the possibility that she'd run away from home or that she just got pierced on Saturday night and staying at a friend's place, or if she had a boyfriend that, you know, she wasn't staying with him. But who knows? But anyway, in this article, Meghan's mother, Dorothy, said Meghan had never left home before without saying whether or not she might be late. And her mum also said that Meghan only had the clothes she was wearing and was carrying about $10 in her purse.
So, and what time of year was that? Was it summer, winter?
July.
July, we're that's winter in July. Australia.
Yeah. So
it's quite cold.
Really cold. So from that information, and remember it was a Saturday, I think we can assume that she really had no intention of not going home, because A, she didn't leave with an overnight bag of stuff. B, she didn't even have enough money for a Saturday night out at the private bin, because I mean, back then, $10, you couldn't even pay the entry and buy a fluffy duck with that amount of money. So, not even a Blue Lagoon.
A fluffy duck. A Blue Lagoon. I got so trashed on Blue Lagoons that same year, 1984, that I ended up throwing up. It was my friend's birthday at some club somewhere. Her parents must have been just looking the other way. I ended up in the bathrooms vomiting. At one point I went and got, because we all got done up to the nines, and I remember coming back with a tray of drinks, all Blue Lagoons, orgasms, and fluffy ducks, and
slippery
what
nipples.
Else is there?
No, that
the
was a
tequila
shot.
Sunrises.
Oh, yes,
big tray. And the next thing I know is my friend's face looking really close at me because I'd slipped and fell forward. I hit my head, and then I was on the ground with the drinks all over me.
No.
And I was then in the bathroom for the rest of the night, and the girls came in one by one, tried to clean me up, and then
holding
they all
your
dropped
hair
me
back.
Off. Yeah. Oh, Mrs. Grom, we're just going to take Georgette upstairs because she fell over and hit her head.
Oh, God. Feeling so good.
She's reeking of alcohol and vomit. Oh,
covered in Blue
God.
Lagoons. Fluffy ducks.
Bloody fluffy ducks.
Oh, fluffy duck. So, you know, I don't think Meghan, she wasn't out for a big night with $10 in her wallet. So,
yeah.
Then it goes on to say that the morning Meghan disappeared, she and some other staff from Big W, and it actually says that she was a bag checker at the front of the store. So she was the girl who was checking your bag, security check.
On the way out?
Yeah.
To see if you've like
nicked
shoved
anything.
A couple of...
Yeah, but also they check on the way in to make sure you're not, you know, carrying drinks
tooled
in
up.
And food and stuff. Don't you remember?
They'd
always check your bags for stuff.
I don't think there are enough jobs to go around in the little town that I grew up in for them to do that.
No.
Remember.
Yeah, at Kmart, they always check you. Anyway, and they definitely check you on the way out, especially the kids.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I was terrible. I remember I went into Kmart and I stole a Gemini necklace, and I had bought one of those freezies, you know, that you get like the freezy drinks, and I popped it in there anyway.
What's a freezy drink?
Oh, you know, like...
Is it those triangle-shaped things?
No, it's more like
a pyramid?
You get the frozen...
What's a freezy?
You know, like the frozen stuff, like the frozen drink.
Oh, like shaved ice.
Yeah, but a freezy.
Slushy puppy. That's
freezy,
it.
Slushy. Yeah. All right, there you go. So anyway, she was...
off them.
Oh, God, we all do.
Sorry, go on.
So she was a bag checker.
Okay.
And anyway, so her and some other people that she worked with, colleagues at Big W, they'd been harassed by a dude who had been making lewd comments that morning.
Oh,
and
God.
It said in the paper that her mother thought that because she'd been harassed by this guy, she might have accepted a lift home with someone she didn't know very well.
Oh, shit.
Which, you know, she's 17. You think she knows stranger danger, but also I guess it's possible if she felt unsafe.
This is in the middle of the day as well.
Yeah, I know. And if she felt threatened. But, I mean, quite frankly, I would just get on an action bus and go home, you know. But if you're feeling unsafe, who knows what
action,
you do.
Do you want to just explain what an action bus is as well?
It's a Canberra. It's a
it
Canberra
It sounds like
bus.
A really
Orange.
Fast bus.
No, it's full of action. If you want some action.
Probably
get
not
on
as
bus.
Much as a London night bus,
oh, God,
but yeah, the action
even,
bus.
Don't even.
It was the name of the public transport company.
Yes.
And it probably still is in Canberra.
Yeah,
right?
Maybe.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to this article. There were a few weird things in this article. So the first happens on the Sunday night. So the day after she went missing, so an unknown man telephoned the family, but he didn't say who he was on the phone, which is weird. And unfortunately, the article doesn't go into what he said to the family. So part of this article was that the police were appealing for this guy to come forward and identify himself. Never did. The second weird thing is that nobody was coming forward with a definite sighting of Megan after she'd left work. Now, it's said here that she'd left work at 12:05 on that Saturday. So it's like she just disappeared without a trace. Wow. Now, we have to remember that this is 1984, right? So CCTV, if it even existed back then.
I don't think it did.
I don't think it did. And if it did, it's certainly like, it certainly wasn't like it is now, which is cameras on every street corner. You know, everybody can, everyone's movements can be traced. It just wasn't like that. But, I mean, there weren't even mobiles back then. So the police had to rely on people coming forward and nobody was. So there was no concrete evidence that anybody had seen Megan since she'd left Big W, except for a guy called Philip Two. She went to college with this guy. Now,
Philip Two, like Philip One and Philip Two? Oh.
Philip T-U, Two. Okay. So she was studying at Narrabundah.
Oh, that's where I went.
I know. So I don't know what that voice was.
That was your cockatoo voice. Hello, cocky.
Oh, God. So she was at Narrabundah, and apparently this guy, Philip Two, was a year above her, and he had a bit of a crush on her. He'd been sort of trying to ask her out on dates for quite some time, and he was actually the one that had taken this picture of her, the one I had said has become the quintessential picture of her that was splashed all over the newspapers. And he'd worked up the courage to ask her out for lunch that day. And Megan was meant to meet him at 12:15 outside Big W. But according to him, she never showed up. So just to remind you, she left Big W at 12:05. And at 12:15, this guy turned up expecting to meet her. So that's a 10-minute window, right?
There's so no one. She would have been standing out the front of Big W then waiting for the date to arrive.
Yes.
Philip One and Philip Two.
Philip Two, true. And so it goes on to say that he waited around till one and then rang Megan's mum at home. Now, like I said before, there weren't mobiles back then. So do you remember if you were arranging to meet somebody, you and they didn't turn up, the only thing you could do was ring their parents, ring the house phone and see if they'd left a message.
Yeah.
And if they hadn't, well, then you were like, well, what the fuck do I do? You know, it was terrible times back then. So,
well, we didn't know any better, did we,
no,
Michelle?
No, we didn't. So. We didn't know any better. Anyway, Megan's mum, Dorothy, thought that she could have gone on a bus home and had missed him. And at this point in the article, they detail a possible route on an action bus, and they were appealing to anyone who had seen someone who fit her description to come forward. It also goes on to say they did a door knock in Mawson, where she lived, and a ground search of the bushland between Woden Plaza and her family house in Mawson, and that they also searched the foreshore of Lake Ginninderra. Now, I find
why
this
all the way over there. That's on the other side of town.
Exactly my point. Like,
that's the other plaza. Belconnen is on that side, isn't it?
Yes. And this is why I think that's really weird, because they're not searching Burley Griffin, Lake Burley Griffin, which is the centre.
That's where I think she would probably have been.
Or even the Molonglo, which is that side of town, right?
Okay.
So they're not revealing why they are, like, you know, dredging the foreshore, but I just think that's weird. But anyway, so the next day, the 1st of August, Canberra Times ran with a headline saying, "Girl's disappearance baffling," where they again just go through that there'd been no confirmed sightings of Megan since
she left
work.
The poor family.
Oh, God, can you even imagine? They must have been beside themselves.
Yeah.
And over the next couple of months, there are a few small mentions of the case in the paper, but the whole story kind of gets buried. And the only mentions...
What was going on at the time? What was burying it? What else was happening in August of 1984? Can you think?
I don't know. Wake me up before you go. Wham! I don't know.
I'm just going to Google that while you continue. I will listen.
You Google. Google 1984. But yeah, August. So basically her case got a bit buried for quite a few months. It was like she just, you know, she wasn't making headlines. And then, you know, there were more appeals and a few people came forward saying they'd seen her at a donut shop at the top of the escalators around 12:10. Another person said they'd seen her at a pie shop at 12:15. But I think it all sounds pretty dodge because is she going for donuts? Is she going for a pie? Who knows? Is she going for anything?
The boy?
I know. She was going out for lunch. So why is she meeting anybody? I mean, why is she going there for any kind of food? So it doesn't sort of make sense. There's a report saying that she was last seen waiting near the car park at Woden Plaza at around 12:15. And look, I'm going to come back to why this is important, but keep that in your mind. So then on September 30th, this is 2 months after she's gone missing, there's an article that is basically an appeal from the detectives in Megan's case to any women in Canberra who might have been threatened, assaulted, or abducted to come forward.
What?
Yeah. And then it goes on to say there are two other unsolved cases in the ACT where young women have just disappeared. And they reference Elizabeth Herfort, who was 18 when she was last seen, on June 13th in 1980, hitchhiking on Commonwealth Avenue, which is in town. It's in the centre of Canberra, late at night. And they also reference a case from February 1971 where a 20-year-old woman called Karen Rowland had left her house at 9 o'clock at night, and her car was found a few days later without her in it. And then 3 months later, in May 1971, her body was found in the Pine Forest near the airport in Canberra.
Oh.
Now, there, when we put up about the hometown murders with David Pike, there were a few people that had mentioned this on the social media as this case. Oh. So maybe this is something we can come back to in the future. But anyway, what I think is interesting about this, and they don't say this in the article, but the police are kind of connecting the dots between these cases and without saying that they are. But they're also trying to figure out if any other women have had some kind of assault or near abduction that for whatever reason, they haven't told the police about. Now, what's really interesting is that 5 days later in the Canberra Times on October 5th, there's a report of a 17-year-old girl. Now, bear in mind, Megan was 17 when she went missing. This girl had been attacked by a man in Mawson, again, where Megan lived.
Yeah.
Who forced this girl into his car at about 5:30 in the afternoon. Shit. 2 days earlier.
Fuck.
And then had driven around Canberra with this girl in the car who apparently escaped while they were driving. Now, this girl's name has never been revealed. But she goes on to tell this really bizarre story. So the abduction was the second time she'd come into contact with this guy. So the day before, he'd been driving up and down her street in Mawson and had gone to her front door carrying a Bible and asked if he could come inside to bless her, bless the house, and to bring Jesus into her life.
Well, that's a door slammed right in your face, I'm afraid.
Well, she was like, no, not interested. And he left. Then the next day, she was walking along her street on her way home at around 5:30 in the evening. The same guy approaches her, asks her to get in his car. She says no, smacks her in the face, puts her in the car, tells her to get down on the floor, and then somehow she escapes at some traffic lights near Mawson.
Hell.
Fucking terrifying.
That's terrifying.
So this is interesting too, right? This guy is described as being 25 years old. 25! He's not even some fucking pervy old creepy dude.
No.
He's 25, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they describe him as 182 centimetres tall, broad shoulders, slight pot belly, short blonde hair.
Pot belly at 25?
Yeah, ew. And short blonde hair on the top, sides, and long at the back.
Oh!
Mullet! So,
I'm sorry, I lost it.
I know.
The image in my mind.
You're like,
oh my God.
So anyway,
I imagine he's wearing a denim jerkin.
It's probably
well.
Got a jerkin on. You know, like Henderson's. Anyway, so just they're not making a link between this, but they kind of are because Meghan is mentioned in this article. But anyway, basically after that, the case goes cold, and a year later, there's a $30,000 reward offered for information leading to the discovery of Meghan, but leads to nothing. And then there's all this weird stuff about private investigator got involved and, you know, had said that he'd spoken to all of Meghan's friends and she'd just run off to Europe to start a new life. But it just,
with $10.
Yeah, 10 bucks. I mean, none of it adds up. So, and look, and she apparently was like a really nice, uncomplicated girl who just wanted to be a teacher when she grew up and who just was nice. And also too, you know, she's working at Big W. She's not raking in the big bucks, you know. No. So
Australia is a very big country and, you know, probably very easy to hide somebody's remains.
Yeah.
And not for them not to be found. Yeah. More so than here in England.
Yeah. There is,
I'd say.
There are whole swathes, even around Canberra, of just bush land that nobody ever walks on. It's nothing. Mm. There's no reason to go there. So I'm going to jump forward to 2011 now.
But before you do, while we're still in 1984, the only thing of note that I could forward, there's a lot of things of note that happened in Australia in 1984 newsworthy.
Okay.
But something that I do very much remember in September was 7 people shot dead and 12 wounded in a bikie shootout between rival bikie gangs of the Bandidos and the Comancheros in the Sydney suburb of Milperra. Don't you remember that? The big shootout?
Oh, vaguely, vaguely.
The bikie gangs.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that was 1984.
And they were all in jerkins. I bet you.
That's anyway. The uniform. That is it where is. Ben Mendelsohn got his idea for the outfits.
It's tough.
Henderson
tough,
kids
man.
Outfit.
It's too tough. So, yeah. So, look, poor old Meghan's case goes pretty cold until 2011 when the ACT Coroner's Court on May the 3rd, 2011, did an inquest into the suspected death of Meghan Mulquinney. So, suspected death. That
well,
poor
they haven't got
family,
a body, so they can't.
That
yeah,
poor
exactly.
family just is still hoping one day she's going to walk through the door.
Yeah.
Anyway. She's a missing person still. Anyway, this inquest finally legally came to the conclusion that she was deceased. So I did some digging. I found the fucking coroner's report.
Oh my God, Michelle.
Yeah. And
guys, I think I just need to point out that Michelle is an actual journalist. And that's why she's so good at Googling.
Oh, that's all I do, Google. But, you know, I'm going to do a trigger warning here because there's some really disturbing information in this report.
Okay.
So
hang on. How did you find a coroner's report when there's no body?
Because they did a coroner's inquest. To legally like say that she was deceased because
I've got it. Okay.
They just need to give some closure to this poor family.
I'm on board. Yeah. Okay.
So look, like I said, trigger warning, disturbing shit coming up. So what jumped out at me was the fact that there were two persons of interest in this case detailed in this coroner's report. First, Philip II.
Of course.
Who later changed his name to
Philip I.
No.
Sorry.
So he changed his name to Prima Panji and became a Buddhist. The second person of interest was a serial rapist called Paul Vincent Phillips. All right, so buckle up for this.
Oh, I don't like him.
Oh, so in the coroner's report, it says that Philip II was not a person of interest in the initial investigations back in 1984. But in 2004, new information came to light because, like I said, he was at Narrabunda, and it says in the report that Philip II had been trying to go out with Meghan for a year, but she wasn't interested and had turned him down every time he asked, except for the one time she said yes on the day she went missing, right?
But do we know that she did actually say yes? Whose word have we got?
We don't have anyone's word.
Did her mother know that she was going on a date with Philip II?
I don't know. I don't know. I had, there was no mention of that from Dorothy, the mum.
Okay.
But anyway, So as we know, Philip II, now Premier Panji, I think that's how you say his name anyway, he made a statement to the police on July 30th, 1984, saying he'd intend to take Meghan out for lunch, didn't show up, and he was interrogated at the time, but he provided a fairly consistent account each time. Plus, apparently, his story was corroborated by other people who'd seen him on that day. So I don't know who those people were, but here's where it gets creepy. In 2004, the Victorian police contacted the Australian Federal Police saying they had information about Philip II because they had received from the Irish police force. Yeah. The Irish police had received a complaint from an Irish woman called Niamh Large, who'd gone to Melbourne from Ireland to study with King Panji at the Buddhist Society International in Melbourne. And she'd been tutored by this guy called Prince Ratu. This woman said to the police that during her time studying at the Buddhist Society, Prince Ratu had spoken about a male who had huge karma to pay and who was prepared to sacrifice his life because he had murdered someone when he was younger. Prince Ratu then said the man had bought a baseball bat, hit the victim with it, knocked her out, and then had sexual intercourse with the corpse.
Oh, whoops.
And then he concealed the corpse under a bed and later disposed of it in a dumpster.
Oh, fuck.
And the person he was referring to was Philip II.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, it was. That. Yes.
So the police, the Victorian police, like, spoke to Philip II about these allegations. And, of course, okay. He denied murdering anyone, including Meghan, right? Sorry, did you want to say something?
Just how come this Irish woman suddenly decided to go and tell that information to the police, do you think?
Because she'd been studying with this Buddhist dude. And
so
then
it was just a simple, like, this Buddhist prince confessed this thing about somebody there.
And then she went
felt it was too much and she needed to go and offload.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's
to the Irish police.
To the Irish police when she had left Australia and there was no comeback for her. Okay. You
right,
know.
Right, right.
And then
right.
That's through whatever, international, not Interpol or whatever. Yeah, that's how it all happened. So, yeah. Philip too denied everything, right? But, and he also said that, oh, maybe this Prince Ratu mentioned something and got it wrong because, you know, he talked about his guilt about Meghan's disappearance. But unfortunately, Prince Ratu died, so he couldn't be questioned about the allegations. And there wasn't enough evidence against Philip too through this woman Neve's allegations. So it was dropped against him. But to this day, he still remains a person of interest. So on to the second person of interest, Paul Vincent Phillips.
Okay, he's got a mullet.
He's a fucking nasty piece of work, right? Born in 1960. I should have done the maths on this. I don't know if he was 25. At the time, that woman that I mentioned earlier.
He would be 24, 25, yep.
Yeah. So,
no, I don't know, actually.
I don't
know. Just make that up.
60, 70, 84. He would be, yes, in 1984, he's 24.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, I got it right. Yes, sorry. So, I felt really stupid, then I felt really smart.
Yeah. So the reason I mentioned that before about, remember, I think this guy could have been the
dude one that was knocking on doors. Yeah,
yeah, with the Bible. Bible. Yep.
Anyway. And the mullet.
And the, and the pot belly. And the mullet and the pot belly.
And the denim jerkin.
So this guy, fuck man,
I'm seeing Woody Harrelson playing him.
Oh,
no, when he, you know,
Ben Mendelsohn, mate, it's got to be Ben.
Okay, Ben's got the role. I'll give it to you, Ben, because you need the work.
His career's really taken a dive. Anyway, this dude, before and after the time of Meghan's disappearance, he was attacking, abducting, and just raping women in Canberra. And also
what
in
a piece
Hobart.
Of work.
I know, what a creep.
Where?
In Hobart.
Hoban?
Hobart.
Hobart, right.
Sorry. So in 1983, he raped a 26-year-old nurse in her home in Chifley, then drove her car with her in it to the Pine Forest near Scrivener Dam and dumped her there in her own car. In 1984, police showed this woman a picture of this guy, Paul Vincent Phillips, and she identified him as being the man who raped and abducted assisted her. Then, on July 27th, 1984, the day before Meghan disappeared, Paul Vincent Phillips was sacked from his job at a car wrecking place in Queanbeyan. His then partner was away on holiday in Queensland at the time.
You mean partner as in girlfriend?
Girlfriend, yeah.
Right.
And she said to police that this guy, Paul Vincent Phillips, told her that during the weekend following his dismissal from his job, he was very upset, depressed, distraught. And in police interviews, this guy has absolutely no alibi, no recollection, no nothing of where he was on July 28th, the day Meghan disappeared. So then he moved to this caravan park in Queanbeyan, right? On August 27, 1984, so a month after Meghan's disappearance, a 20-year-old woman reported to the police that she'd been sexually assaulted in her flat in Queanbeyan. She'd apparently been dragged out of the bath. Forced into her bedroom where she was raped. She then had $37 nicked from her purse.
I need to go and lock my doors.
Oh, I know. Now, look, no one was ever charged with this assault, but get this. Paul Vincent Phillips, who we know had just moved to Queanbeyan to a caravan park, he was one of the police suspects. And a day earlier, on the 26th of August 1984, the manager of the caravan park asked for his rent. Dude gave him $4. He said, I don't have it. Next day, he had 30, all the money. He had the $28 in cash, right? Join those dots. Then later, a few days later on the 6th of September, and we're still in 1984, he was evicted from that caravan park in Queanbeyan and he moved to another one in Fishwick. So a week later, on the 14th of September, a 33-year-old woman was assaulted in a car park in Fishwick. She described a guy who looked like Paul Vincent Phillips and told police he attempted to force her into her car, slapped her, and then when she began to scream, he let her go. He was never convicted of that, but he admitted to it and said he needed the money and was out to rob her. So then,
and the rest.
Buckle up, because I've got a few more bits to this story.
Oh, lordy.
So then on the 21st of September 1984, he abducted a 17-year-old girl in the same fucking car park at Woden Plaza where Meghan had last been sighted. Do you remember I mentioned that earlier?
Yeah.
He made this girl get in the car. He drove her to Uriarra Pine Forest where he raped her and threatened to kill her. He then dumped her in Lyons and took off in her car. Now, he was arrested for this the next day and admitted to everything and was sentenced to 7 years with a non-parole period of 4 years. But he got out after 4 years, right? And on November 28th, 1988, he was arrested in Tasmania for attempting to abduct and assault a 24-year-old woman at a shopping centre.
It's non-stop,
it's
though,
fucking
with this guy.
Tick, 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 right? And he pleaded guilty and he was sentenced to another 3 years.
Three.
That's it. Fucking hell. Anyway, skip forward 10 years to April 15th, 1998. He picked up an 18-year-old hitchhiker in Hobart, threatened her with a knife, drove her to his house, raped her repeatedly until she escaped that night. He was convicted and then released in January 2008. So for the coroner's report, they interviewed him and they said outright, did you kill Meghan? And he said no. So,
because that would have been the only murder on his rap sheet.
Yeah,
because
he's only got abductions up till this point.
Yeah.
So then there was a psychiatric report conducted on this guy, Paul Vincent Phillips, and the conclusion was that his pattern of abduction, the timing of Meghan's disappearance, and the way he always attacked after he'd had some kind of trauma strongly indicated that he was the one that abducted Meghan. And in this case, do you remember, he was sacked the day before before she went missing. So look, I don't know. But in 2011, he still remained a person of interest because of the similarities, because of the assaults he was convicted of, their locations, and the fact that Meghan fit the profile of all his victims. Now, apparently all these women were petite, had childlike features and dark hair, exactly like Megan. And also there were three attacks that happened in a car park. And apparently, like I said earlier, she had been sighted in the car park outside Woden Plaza in the same car park where he abducted that 17-year-old 2 months after Megan went missing.
Oh.
So.
Wow.
Here we are in 2021 and
yeah.
I am really fucking sad to say that this case is still one of Canberra's longest running missing persons cases. And okay. there are still no answers, not for the family and no answers for the community.
Mm.
And the case has gone cold. However, what's interesting though is that in April 2018, this guy, fucking mullet man, Paul Vincent Phillips, died.
Does he still have a mullet?
He's dead now. He died in 2018. And I don't know how. It doesn't say.
Okay.
But after he died, the police received loads of fresh information about Megan's case that related to him. So who knows? All I'll say is there's got to be people out there who know what happened and who mm-hmm. live with that guilt. So, look, even though the case has gone cold, the Megan Mulqueeny investigation, it's still active, you know.
Yeah.
So if anyone knows anything or has information, it's not too late to go to the police. And I'm going to put a link in the show notes of how people who may know something or have heard any kind of snippet can get in touch with Crime Stoppers or the police. So,
great idea, Michelle. Yeah. Well done. And great research. Oh, I mean, that was amazing.
I know, but I feel, you know, I feel like there's no fucking conclusions here. There's no
answers.
You
want to do something. Yeah.
Yeah. But also, you know, for Jen, who obviously this case has stayed with her for decades. Mm-hmm. So that's the case of Megan Mulqueeny. It's terrifying to think that this happens in your hometown, yeah. but it does. So people, eyes it open. Does.
I don't feel safe, people. Don't rest on your laurels.
Oh God. All right.
Keep those doors locked.
So there you go. Like I said, if anyone's got any information, look at the show notes. And yeah, until next week.
Yes, with that lovely bright spring in your step. Eavesdrop your way out of here. And Michelle and I will be back next week with another topic. Oh, eavesdropping! 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 Eavesdropping!